There's a better place to get your podcast. GCNlive.com. Hundreds of thousands of hours. Archived for your listening pleasure. All free at GCNlive.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So now we move into our laser-like focus of triangular UFOs. David Marler?
Well, you had asked about where my interest really started with regard to the triangular UFO phenomenon. And like many, my attention was first drawn to it during the famous wave of sightings in Belgium from 1989 to 1991. And my first exposure was a MUFON cover story written by Bob Pratt, the late Bob Pratt. And I found it fascinating for a number of reasons. One, we weren't dealing with reported lights in the sky, which I think, you know, we really need to kind of cleanse the field and focus more on these structured objects that are being reported. I mean, there's only so many light in the sky reports that we can deal with. And to me, they really amount to nothing.
And they have 12 million of them on YouTube if you need to see them.
Exactly. You can spend a lifetime reviewing all these light in the sky videos that have been captured. But what really struck me was the scale of these objects. They were reported very low altitude, very large in size. We're not talking the little classic 30-foot diameter flying saucer, flying disc. Second, the fact that the Belgian military was taking it quite seriously, not only taking it seriously, but being vocal, holding a press conference to discuss the incidents and the subsequent F-16 radar tracking that occurred later during that wave. I found that particularly interesting, especially when you compare that to the United States Air Force's position, where they really don't ever want to even acknowledge or talk about it and always give you the blanket excuse that they stopped investigating in December 69 with the termination of Project Blue Book. So this was a departure in the field of ufology. Of course, after the Belgian wave, then we started receiving additional reports in other countries. But as I state in the book, my interest went from academic to personal. On January 5th, 2000, we just had the 15th anniversary here recently, we had this famous wave of sightings by various police officers in Southern Illinois. And at the time, I was living in Southern Illinois, about 15, 20 miles from where all these sightings occurred. At the time, I was the Illinois MUFON state director, and I was the closest investigator, so I interviewed these police officers. And as I was sitting in the various police departments, sitting across the desk from these officers, asking them my standard series of questions, I found it very strange that as they're describing their sighting, I'm reflecting back on the testimony that I was familiar with of these gendarmes in Belgium 10 years prior. You could almost take the beginning of one sentence from the gendarme and marry it with the statement of these Illinois police officers. The shape of the object in many cases, the size of the object in many cases, the flight dynamics and lighting characteristics were eerily similar to what I was familiar with in Belgium. And so I began to think, that's where the wheels really started turning after I concluded my investigation into that case, that if there are parallels between these cases, are there parallels with cases in the literature, in the data? And over the next several years, began an exhaustive examination of books, journals, newsletters, newspaper archives. And during the same time period, I was amassing a very large private UFO library. And so I had at my disposal many rare news clippings and many rare reports that weren't necessarily out there on the internet for all to see. At the same time, as I'm putting together this information, and by the way, I did find that there was a rich history, as outlined in the book, of these cases, I was also finding statements that were very prevalent on the internet. Armchair researchers saying, well, this triangular phenomenon is something new, therefore it must be military. Well, we didn't hear about these triangles until the 1980s. And Gene and Chris, I'm sitting there as I'm reading these articles or postings on the internet. I'm looking at a wealth of newspaper articles right in front of me, going back to 1960s, going back to the 1950s, not only describing triangular UFOs, but triangular UFOs with the same lighting characteristics. There's one case in the book from the Hartford Courant from 1960 with a sketch of the UFO. And I challenge anyone to look at that and tell me if that does not look exactly like the reports that we're receiving today. The lights are the same. The flight characteristics as outlined in the article are the same. The witness stated that with the other witnesses that were present, it was a multiple witness case, that one of the eeriest aspects was the fact that it was completely silent, which is, of course, another characteristic or hallmark of these cases that we hear today. So as I systematically started outlining, and if you had a chance to review a lot of the cases in the book, there's a wealth of case material, and there seems to be, as I like to say, a hell of a lot of smoke. So where there's smoke, there's fire. So I don't think we can summarily dismiss these accounts, and I don't think we can summarily attribute these to military aircraft.
Now, once again, there is that claim that you've heard that these things only originated in the 1980s, which, of course, we know doesn't seem to be the case.
That was one of the arguments that was being made, is that many of the people were saying, well, since these didn't appear till the 1980s, that these must be military aircraft.
But yeah, you're saying there's some from the 60s, from the early 60s, actually, if I remember from the book.
Late 1800s are the earliest accounts that I found, and that was actually attributed to Don Keyhoe's first book, The Flying Saucers Are Real. He describes a number or a wave of sightings that occurred all the way back into the 1890 is one of the earliest accounts. And he described that over the Dutch East Indies that several large aerial bodies were sighted. He said that the accounts were describing them roughly as triangular, about 100 feet on the base and 200 feet on the sides. And so we have reports, early reports of triangular objects in the sky, but not just triangular objects, but of appreciable size. Those size estimates are, of course, similar to later reports we received. And then he states that, you know, 5 years after that, there was a wave of sightings in England and Scotland describing those large triangular objects similar to those as seen in the Dutch East Indies. And then there's a 1936 case, which Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center had received a report from years ago from a gentleman now deceased, where in 1936 he claimed to have seen a UFO, which at that time he described as in the shape of a flat iron. He said it was wider at the back and pointed at the front. He described the way that the object moved, very similar to the modern-day contemporary descriptions.
Well, is there a way to differentiate, especially at night, between a triangular array of lights and a solid craft? Because, you know, I recall from my own investigative work that occasionally you'll get sightings of multiple craft that seem to be in a triangular formation, and that is misconstrued by the witness as being a large triangular UFO. Is there any way we can differentiate between those two? I don't really think we can.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Chris, because that's one thing I do mention in the book is that, as you can appreciate, going through the wealth of case material, I found a number of reports where people describe three points of light. To your point, just that. Perhaps they were three independent points of light. The cases I tried to focus on in the book, and admittedly, you know, the book is a distillation of a much larger subset of reports that I was pulling from. But some of the ones I tried to avoid incorporating into the work were reports of just that, three points of light, and that's how they described them, or other vague reports where it sounds like, based on their description, it might have been a high-altitude balloon, you know, where they described it as like an inverted pyramid. It seemed semi-transparent and reflected sunlight. Well, that could very, very well possibly be a high-altitude atmospheric balloon, which take on an unusual appearance. There was one over Latvia that was actually investigated by the Russian military that I think was a high-altitude balloon. But to your point, the ones I tried to focus on were, A, multiple witness cases, and B, cases where the witnesses described as the UFO moved overhead, we saw the points of light. And by the way, some of these didn't describe any lights. But as the object moved overhead, we could see a dark triangular shape against a lighter background in this night sky.
Right.
And we could actually see the object blocking out the stars as it moved overhead. Now that, I think, to your point, is a little bit more to work with or a little bit more substantial in the way of reports than just, to your point, points of light in the sky.
Yeah.
Getting substantial, we're talking about a nuts and bolts phenomenon here because it's something that you can see as a structured craft, which is so very different from any of the UFO cases, and that's why it makes it more compelling. And we've got a lot more compelling stuff to talk about. The book Triangular UFOs, David Marler is the author, with contributions from a bunch of people we'll mention later, including George Wingfield and material from Richard Dolan, etc. More to come with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Friends, this is Alex Jones for MidasResources.com. For more than 15 years, I have exclusively used Midas Resources for all my precious metal needs. Whether it's bullion or collectibles you're looking for, Midas Resources is simply the best. I own my gold as a hedge against inflation. This Federal Reserve fiat currency could go the way of the Deutschmark and the Weimar Republic anytime. In these historically dangerous times, it makes sense to physically hold gold and silver. Midas already has some of the best deals in the industry. But if you give them a call and mention the radio special, they will give you a list of the day's super specials. Midas brokers are standing by to answer all your questions at 800-686-2237. They also have a lot of informative free literature explaining the opportunities and risk of holding precious metals. They are ready to answer your questions at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
You pick up the receiver. With your heart racing and sweat dripping from your forehead, you finally muster the courage to dial the number to call into your favorite talk radio show. It rings once, twice, and then...
Hello, it's GCN. What's your name and the state you're calling from?
Surprised you got through, you squeak out.
Jason from Minnesota.
Please hold.
As you patiently wait for your turn, you begin to daydream about being a famous talk radio host and what it would be like to have your own show.
Jason from Minnesota, you're up.
Millions of loyal listeners worldwide waiting to call and talk to you.
Caller, are you there?
Cheering crowds surround you, calling out your name.
Jason! Going once. Twice. Okay, we gotta move on to the next caller.
You blew it.
Huh? Wait. No!
Interact with the host you're listening to right now, online at GCNLive.com. Click on the community link. Engage with other listeners. Ask questions. Start debates. Don't agree with the host? Let them know. Be a part of the community at GCNLive.com.
On Facebook, on the news, and in conversations with friends, we're bombarded every day with advice on how to be healthier, from gluten-free and non-GMO diets to how much exercise and sleep the body needs. But how much have you heard about alkalizing the body? AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are a holistic and natural way to get your body's pH levels back in balance. Just a few drops in water will help your body rid itself of harmful waste, and even the healthiest of diets can be complemented with your daily use of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Who isn't looking for more vibrance, vigor, and energy? Now buy two bottles of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops and get $10 off your order. Visit AlkaVision.com or call 800-518-7615. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops are packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds. Open the door to greater health, vitality, and zest for life. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health. Call 800-518-7615 or head to AlkaVision.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So if you're tuning in late, our question is why? Why did you tune in late to the Paracast? But the book is called Triangular UFOs, an Estimate of the Situation, from David Marler, with a preface from John Alexander and contributions from Richard Dolan, Mark Roediger, Sam Maranto, George Wingfield, Omar Fowler. Just very quickly before we get back to our discussion, the various contributors, in what respect did they add to the book?
In answering that, let me also continue to answer your earlier question as far as what prompted me to write the book. In 2012, I attended the Ozark UFO conference. I had spoken there many times in the past, but this particular year when I presented my material, I was really amazed at the response on the part of the audience. I had more people expressing interest in the research, specifically, you know, regarding these triangular UFOs. One person that expressed interest, who I had met just the day before very briefly, was Colonel John Alexander. And as I was stepping off the stage, I was met with a number of audience members that either had cases they wanted to share or questions. And John worked his way across the room and came over and shook my hand and just said, "That's one of the damn finest presentations I've seen at one of these UFO conferences in a long time." And so he was very interested in the research that I was engaged in. This led to subsequent emails and phone calls, and I shared a lot of additional case material with him. In the process of coming home from that conference, I decided that perhaps I should start documenting this. I actually had two people ask me, "Can I buy a copy of your book?" At which point I had to somewhat in an embarrassed way say, "Well, I don't have a book." And they told me, "Well, you need to write a book. You have really good information." That, in conjunction with John Alexander's interest in the research, I thought, you know, that was what really prompted me to start the writing process. In so doing, then I wanted to enlist the aid or the assistance of others that had encouraged me in my early days, such as George Wingfield, a dear friend of mine, and Omar Fowler over in the UK, who did some of the early triangular research back in the 80s and the 90s. It was contributions by those that assisted me, those that helped me and encouraged me over the years. Chris, I'm sure you would agree. It's just like, you know, we wrote the book, but it's certainly not without the help of those that assisted in that whole process.
Oh, yeah. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. At least that's what I say constantly about my work.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and that's why I wanted to incorporate towards the end of the book other researchers' perspectives or insights, because David Marler does not have the answer to the UFO phenomenon. I would never be that arrogant to ever make a statement like that. And I believe that we need to have dialogue. And I also believe, in conjunction with that, we can disagree without being disagreeable.
Yes, in a perfect world.
But maybe not in the UFO field.
It's kind of like communism. In theory, it works, but in practicality, it doesn't.
Yes.
We have to be careful about that statement, because now people will be saying, because we're on the Genesis Communications Network, the home of Alex Jones, that David Marler is saying something nice about communism. We want to make sure we understand.
No, he was saying something nice about communism in theory.
Big difference.
Well, I must say, one of the cases that I've always been very intrigued by, of course, are the Phoenix Lights case. Having been actually working down in Casa Grande, Arizona, about a third of the way from Phoenix to Tucson on I-10, staying in a motel room, watching the NCAA basketball finals that night, hearing hooping and hollering outside and thinking, wow, somebody must have a TV in the parking lot. And then to see this guy come on, break into the game and say, "I'm standing here and there's a huge UFO behind me." And I'm thinking, what's going on? So I run outside and all these people are milling around saying, "Oh, you missed it. It just flew over about 20 minutes."
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, man, what about the Phoenix Lights? I mean, you know, you've heard some pretty interesting skeptical analysis of the event. Recently, we had stories of skeptics coming forward with this flight of Air Force planes that was misconstrued as the Phoenix Lights.
Right.
I've done a bit of looking into this particular case, obviously, having almost been a witness to it. Where do you come down on this particular case? It's quite celebrated, that in Stephenville, of course.
Yes.
But where do you come down on that? You had some interesting observations in the book.
Yeah, I believe that there was an unidentified flying object that was traversing the state of Arizona. I don't believe that it was A-10 Warthogs dropping flares over the Barry Goldwater test range. Now, that being said, and I know this is a point of consternation for a lot of people, the famous videos that have been shot of the lights over Phoenix, in my estimation, are just that, flares being dropped from A-10 Warthogs over the Barry Goldwater test range. But the thing that I think is important is that, you know, 45 minutes to an hour after the initial wave of sightings, those flares were dropped over the Barry Goldwater test range. So we are talking two different incidents. I have a hard time dismissing all of the eyewitness testimony all the way down the state of Arizona where people were describing this. And to the point we were discussing earlier with regard to just points of light in the sky, many of the eyewitnesses in the greater Phoenix area described lights on the craft, on this object, but they were recessed. So in order for these lights to appear to be recessed, they're seeing some type of superstructure either around or attached to all of these lights. Again, I just don't think we can summarily dismiss all of this eyewitness testimony. I think something flew over the area. Now, what it was, I don't know. But there has been so much, I think, in the way of muddying of the water with these famous videos, because people always tend to gravitate towards videos and photographs. And in my estimation, and you know, Chris, I'd be interested in your take as well. When you look at that famous video of the Phoenix lights, if you've ever seen military aircraft dispersing flares, that's exactly what it looks like. You see the series of lights appearing one after the other with equal spacing between their deployment.
I absolutely agree. I think that that was probably a red herring, a quickly dispatched red herring to try to take the focus off the initial event, which, as you mentioned, occurred about 40, 45 minutes prior to that. We do have this whole flight line that's been established from all the way up around Henderson, Nevada, going all the way down the Prescott Valley, hitting 17 and going down and then following I-10 down to Tucson, where then it appears to have made, I think, a turn to the west, if I remember.
I believe so.
There were witnesses all along that particular flight path. Much of the witness testimony, to my knowledge, does not conform to the actual shape that you see in the famous footage, which to me were unusual looking flares. They did, I think, hang there a little longer than your average flare would. There's some interesting things we can talk about in terms of the technology of those flares, but I agree absolutely that that was not only flares, but I think they were hastily dispatched up there to try to take the focus off the initial event.
I'm glad you said that, because I just did a recent lecture here in Albuquerque for the local MUFON group. We touched on that. It's reassuring to hear your take on that as well, because I tend to agree that it was almost as though, and again, I must preface this by saying it's sheer speculation on my part, it was almost like they wanted to establish plausible deniability. Get some A-10s up there, dispatch some flares, that way we can attribute any of these sightings to that and dismiss this whole thing and try to diminish the level of interest. What's interesting, though, I draw parallels to this other wave of sightings, namely the Hudson Valley wave from 83 to 86, because it's interesting in the sense that they're describing these flying wings or chevron-shaped UFOs, but also what's interesting is the fact that the Hudson Valley wave had these UFOs sighted. And then shortly thereafter, we had reports of Cessna planes going up with these unusual lighting arrays in that respect.
David, we'll do our break here. David Marler joining us. We're talking about those Hudson Valley UFO sightings, and we're coming with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Nation's largest independently owned and operated talk radio network, the Genesis Communications Network, GCN.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
We love that you're passionate about GCN. And whether you're a listener, a business owner, or a radio industry professional, we've redesigned the new GCN newsletter to keep you in the know. Get updates on your favorite GCN shows and hosts. Go to GCNlive.com and click on the banner in the upper left corner. Just for signing up, you're automatically entered for monthly giveaways. Start receiving your newsletter today. The future of talk radio. GCN.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. And there's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Hi, this is Tracy Torme, screenwriter, producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Now, David Marler, in looking at the Hudson Valley case, I guess the only red flag one would consider here is the problem with Phil Imbrogno and his credentials, where he was later found to be a fraud, basically.
Yeah. That was unfortunately very sad to find that out. And I've had this discussion with some of the other researchers as well, where, you know, now in retrospect, we're trying to tease out this information. But I would like to emphasize that, at least in respect to my book, I didn't draw strictly from, the book Night Siege, which was co-authored by Philip Imbrogno, as well as Bob Pratt and Dr. Hynek. But I did actually go to the original source materials. I actually do have a wealth of case material, namely the original local newspaper articles from that time. So to that point, and it's a very valid point to bring up, that I did go to the original newspapers at the time to try to ascertain what was being reported and to also verify what was being documented in Night Siege.
Yeah, and again, we have a series of reports that were literally witnessed by hundreds, if not thousands, of people. So it's not like you just have some isolated redneck yahoo sitting out in a trailer park somewhere. these are Westchester County, for instance, is one of the highest per capita, counties in the country. There's a lot of professionals there, doctors, lawyers, scientists. The quality of witnesses for the Hudson Valley cases, I think, is higher than your average sighting wave in terms
I think that's very important to kind of, paint the landscape as far as, what that area consists of, the caliber of people that live there. I completely agree. And again, we look at the Hudson Valley wave and you look at the description of the UFOs, you look at some of the flight characteristics, and it seems to fit an overall pattern of these triangular UFOs. you look at some of those reports, and again, we're talking, you know, upstate New York in the early mid-80s, and then you can compare that to a wave of sightings that I documented in my book going back to 1957 over Denmark. And this was written up in the Danish newspaper BT of the time, and I even found a Reuters news article from April 1958 that described, and this is, I always emphasize this when I do my presentations, their words, not mine, triangular spaceships is how it was written up in the Reuters news article and in the Danish newspaper BT. And they described these large, low-flying, dark, triangular UFOs. And one of the accounts in the Reuters news article discusses the fact that these other smaller objects were seen to fly out of the larger triangular object. The Reuters news team that went out to interview the primary witness in this particular case, it was over the village of Brohier, they found 20 other witnesses in the village that corroborated the woman's testimony. And in the Danish newspaper BT, it states that American and Danish officials are looking into the case.
Now, have the authorities ever come up with an official explanation for this? Because, you know, when you have lights in the sky, you know, you can dismiss it as anything. You know, flares, stars, planets, meteor lights, or whatever. When you have something that looks like a structured craft, what's their excuse?
Well, I mean, you know, quite often they'll refer to these private pilots, as I mentioned in the Hudson Valley case. Flares are, of course, another one, as you mentioned. But there is no official explanation that covers all of these triangular UFO reports. Admittedly, as we know, our military is very tight-lipped when it comes to the UFO subject. But the one thing that's fascinating is not so much what government or military officials are saying. What really strikes me as odd, and something I always like to bring up in these discussions, the fact that when you go on the internet and you type in triangular UFO, obviously you're going to find a wealth of material and of course, you know, spurious YouTube videos. But what's interesting is the fact that you always find reference to this TR-3B aircraft. And to me, this is something that needs to be addressed head on, because so many people, and earlier you were asking about comments and reviews of the book, a lot of people are saying, oh, triangular UFOs, those are the TR-3B aircraft. And people will say, well, that was developed by McDonnell Douglas or Boeing, or, well, we know how that craft operates. We know where it was tested. We know insiders that worked on the program. But I have to say, we have no evidence to support any of those claims. But people are stating matter-of-factly, oh, that's just the TR-3B. Well, where is your evidence for that? It's like trying to validate the reliability of a Ouija board with a crystal ball. That just, you're taking one mysterious thing and trying to explain it with another mysterious thing.
Oh, that was excellent. I got to remember that one. I'm going to steal that one for it from you. Well, and let's get real. Some of these triangle sightings are from a half a mile to a mile in length. And I'm sorry, we don't have powered black budget aircraft like the Flying Manna that come anywhere near that size. Now, if you're talking about lighter than air, the potential for lighter than air platforms,
correct,
that's a completely different subject. But
absolutely,
the Aurora, the TR-3B, it's ludicrous.
Until we can substantiate these with official documentation, I must emphasize that official documentation, not the one or two whistleblowers that have come forward saying that they worked on these classified projects. And in the course of writing the book, I interviewed British aerospace engineers. I interviewed people from Boeing, McDonnell Douglas, and every single one of them, and no surprise to the educated listeners out there, every single one of them said, if this person or persons worked on these classified projects involving the so-called purported TR-3B, and they're on the internet, and they're on the lecture circuit, and they're on documentaries talking about said classified projects, they're not only going to be fired, they're going to be fined, imprisoned, and their pensions revoked. There's a reason that we have these gentlemen sign secrecy oaths and sign affidavits that they will not disclose this information. And the idea that these people worked on these classified projects and are out there not only describing the fact they worked on them, but then going into detail describing the physics behind how these craft operate, which they've done,
Yeah.
And to think that they're sitting out there with impunity and that no action has been taken against them flies in the face of logic, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not to say that, you know, someone driving along maybe between Rachel and Eli or something, Nevada, back in the early 80s or late 70s, at dusk and having a, a B-2 bomber fly over or a stealth fighter fly over. Obviously, before that was publicly acknowledged, that those projects and those those aerial platforms, they saw a UFO.
Absolutely, Chris. And in fact, a very specific comment that was made to me, which I have in the book, one of the aerospace engineers I interviewed is the late Dr. Paul Ziss, who lived in St. Louis. And he actually taught at Parks Air College, part of St. Louis University. He was the head of their aviation section. And he was kind of the local aviation expert when this January 5th, 2000 incident occurred. But he's been involved in classified projects for 30, 35 years. And like I said, he passed away shortly after my book was published. But he made an interesting comment. I asked him about the January 5th case with the passage of 12, 13 years. Did he believe that that was something that we created? In other words, something from the DOD, or does he believe that that might have been someone else's technology? And his answer was very interesting, and it touches on what you're bringing up. He said, "Dave, if it was just a triangular object or triangular aircraft, I would think it might be something similar to what can be seen around Edwards Air Force Base," which I thought was an interesting statement. But he said the fact that the maneuverability and the high rates of acceleration from a dead stop, as reported by these police officers, I don't believe that it's any of our technology. He said, I believe it is someone else's technology that we're looking at.
So obviously, in something like this, on the basis of what we're seeing, more than other UFOs, once again, we're focusing on the technology and why it cannot be somebody's secret test aircraft, because it would be a very interesting kind of technology, wouldn't it? But I have a wacky question to ask in a moment.
Sure. Oh,
okay, David Marler is joining us with the wacky Gene and the very normal Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Great minds think alike. The network for the independent minded. The Genesis Communications Network. GCN.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Talk to a sales rep at iWeb.com. Use the promo code TechNightOwl for a special discount.
We all have our own idea about what being safe and secure means. The door's locked, bills are paid, you've got a job that keeps the lights on, and a home to call your own. But what happens when Mother Nature throws a curveball?
I'm calling you to take cover.
Are you prepared to live without electricity or passable roads for weeks at a time? Do you even have a plan B? If you do, are you willing to bet your life on it?
Children left with no homes.
And no one's coming to help them.
The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to MyPatriotSupply.com. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48 states. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today, or visit us at MyPatriotSupply.com. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare.
Yeah?
Do you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not. Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
What good is a Big Berkey water filter?
We get that question a lot here at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And in a word, the answer is protection. Protection from water main breaks, E. coli contamination, environmental chemical spills, pesticide runoff, chlorine taste and smell, and all forms of fluoride. Plus, Big Berkey water filters are the original gravity water filter system and most trusted on the market for a reason. Tested by multiple independent NSF EPA certified labs, they are the gold standard in water purification. At only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. That means big savings. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get a Big Berkey today at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit our website or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
This is Micah Hanks of the Gray Alien Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
A wacky question, okay. So, do you believe, first of all, in the reality of the Roswell case, that it may have been a crashed spaceship?
This is going to sound like a politically correct response, but it is the most honest response I can give you. When it comes to Roswell, I'm an agnostic. There have been so many stories circulated that I honestly don't know what to believe at this point or what to accept. The only thing I can actually state is something crashed. I think all people are in agreement on that. Something crashed. Something was recovered. But there have been so many stories that have circulated and so many different permutations on this story over the years. And many witnesses that have come forward with testimony that were then later proven to be false, that I'm pretty much an agnostic when it comes down to that. I'm very skeptical with regard to the, let's say, secondary or tertiary aspects of the Roswell incident, namely like the MJ-12 documents and things like this. Very skeptical with regard to all of that. But I honestly don't know. As I like to say, I wasn't there in July 1947, so I don't know what came down. But I don't fall into the traditional UFO belief system that absolutely, positively an extraterrestrial craft crashed. We've been back engineering it over the last several decades, and MJ-12 was created as a result to deal with the situation. I don't readily accept that. I can't discount it, but to me, I need to see more evidence of that.
Okay, you kind of begin to ask my question, which is, assuming Roswell really was a crashed spaceship, and I find myself very much in your camp. I'm agnostic about what might have happened then. Okay? Assuming it was a crashed spaceship, we would expect that we'd be trying to reverse engineer the technology. So therefore, if we reverse engineer the technology from that or any other crash, could these black triangles be the result of our attempts to duplicate alien technology? Just wondering, that's all.
No, I mean, it's a valid line of thought. And I think that whether it was in 47 or 89 or 1962, if an extraterrestrial craft did crash, any government, any military would drool over the ability to be able to understand and back engineer the technology to basically develop it into a weapon of war and basically take over the world. I mean, anybody that could suddenly have advanced technology like that drop in their lap, that they could rule the world if they so choose. But You know, the other thing I like to mention, and this is something that is usually never discussed, and so I'm glad you brought that up. You know, quite often, and I think we know the UFO belief narrative that Roswell was an alien spacecraft. We did back engineer it. We've mastered the technology. And now a lot of these objects are, in fact, back engineered alien slash man-made technology. What's interesting, though, is I think it really presupposes quite a bit. Namely, let's just say for the sake of argument that an extraterrestrial craft did crash in 1947. And I really never hear people really analyze it in this respect. Let's just speculate that the technology, and I'm going to be conservative, let's just say the technology is 1,000 years ahead of us. And let's also keep in mind it's alien technology. Okay? So we have two big hurdles here. We have a 1,000-year gap in technological advancement, and it is alien by its very definition. How are we in 1947, or for that matter, in 2015 now, going to necessarily be able to even begin to comprehend the physics behind this technology? And I say that just by looking at my smartphone sitting here in front of me. If I just sent this back, human technology in 2015, back to the late 1800s, not even 1,000 years, not even close to 1,000 years, how would they even begin to understand what they're looking at?
We've used that exact analogy numerous times on this show.
Right. This is one of the speculations we point out to, that Chris takes his iPhone 5S and he sends it back through the time machine to 1814, where we took a little trip, but no, it's like a song. 1814. And you give those people your iPhone. Remember, there's no cellular network. And maybe the battery still works, but of course, once it runs out of charge, what happens then? Then it's bricked. Would they even know how to open the thing up without breaking it?
And again, there's two hurdles. There's that the temporal hurdle in the advancement in technology. But again, let's say this is something from another star system or another dimension of reality. I mean, that just compounds matters tenfold.
A good example of this line of thinking would be Jacques Vallée's novel, Alien Tell or Fast Walkers, that he co-wrote with Tracy Torme.
Yes.
That exact scenario is addressed very creatively in that book, which I do also recommend along with your book. And the fact that Vallée comes down almost suggesting that there's a biological aspect to the technology, that it's a living technology, that it's not totally mechanistic. And so, you know, we really, we would be scratching our heads, and I doubt that we could even figure out even how to open the door.
Well, and again, I we have to take this UFO belief system, and that's really what it is, belief system in segments, in small bites. And again, let's assume for the sake of argument, Roswell did occur. It was an extraterrestrial spacecraft that crashed in 47. Okay, let's just run with that for a minute. Okay, the government retrieved it. They have this advanced technology. They don't even begin to understand it. And you also have dead bodies. Okay, dead alien bodies, or human for that matter, are not going to be able to answer questions insofar as where they come from, why they're here, and, you know, the nature of their existence. So, but this belief system that has developed within the UFO community is they crashed, we've back engineered the technology, we know where they come from, we know why they're here. I just think it speaks volumes in leaps of logic. Just because you have a dead alien body, just because you have a crashed spacecraft, doesn't give you any insight into where it came from or why they're here.
And even if ET talked to you, and could be understood somehow. You know, they've learned English, they have a universal translator, whatever. Why assume they'd be telling you the truth?
I mean, why would they prefer strawberry ice cream?
I thought they liked buckwheat pancakes myself. I thought they really had an affinity for buckwheat pancakes. Ask Joe Simonton if he's still alive.
I love that case. Absolutely love that case.
Is he still alive even? I don't think so.
I
doubt it. He was pretty old, I think, back then when that case occurred. But that, if we could just jump back for a moment, I used that same argument with regard to the abduction phenomenon. You know, the abductees are given all this information. How do you know the veracity of those statements? there's no possible way you can verify the veracity of what they're telling you.
Yeah.
And why would they get in touch with somebody totally unknown? You know, a postal worker.
Right.
In the country road, coming home with his wife from a trip to New Hampshire.
Well, I guess from our scientific standpoint, we could look at it as just random sampling.
Right, but don't you think it's happening too often? I mean, some people say millions of Earthlings are being impregnated with alien DNA and the sperm of an alien. Even assuming it could work, we have to be pretty close in terms of the genetic makeup to ET for crossbreeding to be possible.
Right. No, I agree. And I just think that if ufology is going to move forward and survive as a viable line of inquiry, we need to be able, and by we, I mean the greater UFO community. And I know I'm sounding idealistic here, and you can slap me for that, but we need to be able to separate belief from what we can substantiate. You know, it doesn't matter what Chris O'Brien believes. It doesn't matter what David Marler believes. What matters is what we can document, substantiate. What matters is where the data takes us, not where our beliefs steer the data.
So what do you think about the people out there who think the UFO mystery is pretty much solved? The U.S. Air Force or some other government agency has all the answers. And now if we could only get 100,000 signatures, we send it to the President of the United States. And as a result of those 100,000 demands from the populace that we tell the truth about UFOs, that they admit everything they expected is true. And we're going to have this move into our next segment.
Don't hold your breath, Gene.
What are the chances that even if those signatures are there, that they get enough people to do this crazy thing, that they're going to get more than a polite brush off? Just like the first petition. The first petition, we sent it out, and some third-level bureaucrat says, well, of course, we have no evidence that spaceships are visiting us. End of story. There it goes. The question about disclosure and the prospects. We're asking that question of David Marler, author of a book about triangular UFOs. This is the Triangular Gene with the Straight Arrow, Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Not just an alternative to the mainstream media. We're the premier independent talk radio network. We are GCN.
Hi, this is Larry Smith. Sometimes bad things happen to good people. Like when the jeweler ruined my ring and wouldn't do anything about it. But when my Legal Shield attorney called him and told him what my rights were, I received a check for over $2,100. Worry less and live more with LSProtection.com. That's LSProtection.com, or call 855-340-SAVE. Again, 855-340-7283.
Results will vary from case to case.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
The human body is extraordinary. Despite all the stresses we inflict upon it, it still works hard to stay in balance. Thousands upon thousands of people rely upon Heart and Body Extract to help their body stay balanced. This excellent 100% natural herbal formula helps maintain healthy blood pressure levels, cleans arteries, promotes good circulation, balances cholesterol, and more. HB Extract, paired with healthy lifestyle choices like good nutrition and exercise, can give you a life free of pain, sickness, and fear. Recapture your youthful vitality and experience your body healing itself with the aid of HB Extract. It's extremely effective and it starts working in just days. Visit HBExtract.com to learn more and to read scores of testimonials from satisfied customers. And we've never increased our price in over 10 years. That makes Heart and Body Extract as great a value now as it was the first day we sold it. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Call 866-295-5305 or go to HBExtract.com.